I fell into a ring of fire. I fell in.
Let's see it.
When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Oh, I wish I was in Wellington. The wind is cutting.
Hello and welcome to Fever FM. Tonight we are talking the men's game versus Sydney and the women's game versus Sydney. So all Sydney, all the time. Hello, Dale. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Should we start with the men's? Because that's what you've written at the top of the agenda, Dale. We'll crack into it. Paulson, Sutton, Wooten, Sermon, Payne, Old, Cryev, Costa, Pennington, Rufa and Hughes. I guess it's a bit of an interesting one for a home setup, having those three centre backs and the return of Mr. Nico Pennington. I'll go to you first, Dave. What did you think of that setup?
To be honest, I hadn't even clicked that anything had changed. I was at the pub and quite a few beers deep by the time the lineup came out. Yeah, no. I mean, as you say, it's different. It's interesting, but we know that Chiefy likes to tinker, so. I don't think that's a surprise. He knows Ufi well, and Ufi would have been trying some stuff against him, and I think he's set himself up the way he thought was best to beat a Sydney side.
Yeah, I think he probably put another centre back at least, as to start the game to try counter some of the pressing that Sydney would have inevitably done at the start of the game, and having another person along that back line to help move the ball a little bit more and give another option was probably the thinking, I'd say.
It didn't work.
No, I was about to say, it was a sound theory, but as you say, they pressed us. It's obviously that Leipzig style. And we turned it over in our final third, and it did not end well. It'd be fair to say referee Fagani was loose with his definition of a foul.
Yeah, I mean, that's his MO. He basically leaves everything go for about 60 minutes, sets the bar very high for both a foul and a yellow card, and then throws him out towards the last 30 minutes to anyone who even looks strangely at him, I think.
Well, I think the epitome of that this game was when Wooten gets a yellow card for time wasting while we're making a sub. Which is just like, suddenly the threshold is just so far gone from anything you see in that first 60 minutes. It's crazy.
Mm. I mean, I'm pretty sure he gave Nico Pennington a yellow card for sitting down, didn't he?
I don't think that actually got shown. At least it's not in any records.
Oh, that was just him noting the substitution.
I think so, yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah, he seemed to be writing on his yellow cards, and I wasn't sure if it was this guy got a yellow card or... I just want to know who was a sub. So that first goal, Pennington gets bundled over. Caceres has a shot, and Robert McKenzie does coolly slots home from a very, very gentle position, about 8 yards out. He wasn't missing that, I think it's safe to say. This was not the best start we wanted in front of 18,000 people.
But there's a clear foul. I don't know. As you say, we know this is how that game always is going to get reffed, but it's still frustrating when there's, it's a foul. That's a foul. It's that simple.
Yeah, I think any other referee, I think, in the league probably gives it. It's contact from behind. Everything I've seen makes it look like a foul, but again, you'd never expect to get given this from Fagani because that's just not what he does at the start. So whether we should have dealt with that better, or whether it's possible to deal with it better when you're getting sort of bundled from behind. But
yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, soft fouls where you go to ground a bit too easy or whatever a thing you shouldn't be doing when you've got him reffing, right? But this is, what can you do to avoid that? It's contact from behind. There's very little you can do about this, I don't know as a team that you can prepare for that. I think the only thing you can do is not whinge about it too much. And I don't think we did, but it still sucks when it costs you a goal.
Oh, I think we did. Cryev, the entire game, was complaining to the ref about it, to the point where Cryev was getting fouled and Fagani was just turning away and just waving his hands to tell him to get up. I think he did himself no favours with the ref. He just Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we knew that was going to be the case. And I think it was a little naive by some of the players to think that they were going to get fouls. I mean, certainly after that first one, you should have gone, okay, we need to adjust our radar here and just be aware that we're not getting any whistles at all.
Yeah, and I think some of our players did. Like, I watched the replay and I see Rufa got into some very hefty tackles in that first sort of half an hour or so. So I think maybe we just had a very clear reminder of what you could get away with early on, and we adjusted a little bit. There was a lot of a lot of bodies getting thrown around in that early sort of half an hour or so.
Well, that's where I kind of thought that Rufa came to the fore. He was willing to throw himself around, and he got his timing right pretty much every time. But I can't remember how many tackles he made in that first bit, but he certainly earned his all-whites call-up courtesy of Timmy Payne's wee incident later on.
Yes, so he doesn't get injured, I suppose. Otherwise, we're... just as we start to get a...
Yes, that would be bad.
Just as we start to get a full complement of players back, a couple of injuries pop up.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was... we probably get to that in a bit. Was some nice play by Sutts on that left-hand side. Interesting to see him ahead of Kelly Heal, but obviously going that three centre-backs, you probably want a more mobile left-back. It makes sense. But a beautiful cross-field ball across to Costa, who gets in behind the Sydney defence, then tries to dink it over Redmayne. You're shaking your head, Dave, and I know what you're going to say because I agree with you. Please say it now.
This should have just cancelled out the other goal. It should have been that easy. This needed to be finished. And I don't mind the dink as the option, but that's not really Costa's kind of normal MO for finishing a chance like this. And I don't know why in this instance he goes for it. You know, he normally just slots this, and he should. It's cocky, maybe, I don't know, but it just should have been a goal.
What offended me was it's Redmayne. You know he's big and he's going to make himself big, but he isn't mobile. Yeah. Why go over him? He's huge. It just didn't make sense to me. You either commit to the dink early, which he kind of was thinking about and then kind of delayed a little bit and then did it, or go round him.
I think perhaps what was in his mind is Redmayne's, he's got a slightly unusual goalkeeping style, and he sets himself quite low, like almost like ice hockey styles.
Yeah.
And what that does mean is shots that are low, he tends to get sort of feet or gloves or something to it. And I was wondering whether that was kind of in his back of mind. He thought, oh, well, if he's going low, if I dink it, he's probably not expecting it and he won't be able to react. But perhaps the dink wasn't quite as, perhaps a bit too loopy and not a bit more force, more of a higher shot rather than a chip.
Well, that's kind of what I think is his limiting factor as a keeper. I mean, he gets so low and he's such a big unit, he's not going to move sideways well. His feet are planted too wide. He can only go up and stay still. And we've seen him get caught out quite a few times, like his ability to move sideways is really limited. I'm surprised that Costa wasn't a little more aware of that. But then again, I wouldn't have got even close to that ball, so maybe I should just shut up.
No, I mean, Redmayne still does well. It's still not a bad little chip, right? That would have beaten a lot of keepers by surprise. And yeah, and, he gets a hand on it, does well. So, yeah.
Yeah, not long after this, we saw Tim Payne drifting back to cut off a through ball and just go very suddenly lame. Right hamstring pings, and that's the end of him for not only the rest of this game, but also his All Whites call-up. That's a hell of a shame and a real difficulty when we don't have a whole lot of right-back cover for the Knicks or for the All Whites, for that matter.
Yeah, I guess it'd be more than just, I guess, the window, you know, hamstrings are six odd weeks, so looking towards the end of the season, if that, and I guess the only solid you can take from that is we've got Salas into the squad, you know, in the summer transfer market. If we didn't there, it's looking pretty thin replacements, but having him there is could be quite a genius move, investment in the transfer window that was in January.
Yeah, I think we talked about it. I mean, he is a very versatile player. He's very quick and solidly skilled. If he can stay on his feet, I think he's pretty useful. He doesn't mind getting up and back either, which is something to be said for. I mean, that's one of Payne's strengths, I guess. So less of an issue. Yet to see what his delivery's like. I didn't really take note of what he did after that.
When he played one of the balls in that led to the Cosses break for the second goal, I think, didn't it? He was the one who played the ball down the line for Costa, who then chopped in. So there was a couple of other times where I think his passing out threaded their left back and their centre back, caused a bit of problems. So yeah, I think Chivi, when he signed him, said, you know, he's a fullback who can also play central midfield. So you don't go on to play against Germany at right back if you're not competent there. I mean, maybe you do.
Yeah,
you kind of do, mate. They all drift in, especially if it's Werner playing out left. Yeah, don't start me on that. There was. I mean, I think it was fair to say Sydney were all over us that first 30 minutes. Even if we got the ball, we really struggled to get that out of our half. It didn't look panicked, but it didn't look comfortable. I think that's the word you liked using in the rest of the season, Dale.
Yeah, the first 30 minutes, we didn't look particularly great. But, you know, having said that, Costa had probably, you know, a very good chance to score. They had the goal, and I think around that 30-minute mark, they had the other one that was ruled out, wasn't it, for handball?
Yeah.
Yeah, quite correctly ruled out for handball.
Just not dealing with
it. Yeah. And they had another, was it a corner, I think, that Serda smashed against the post at the back post. So they had a couple of, you know, had three pretty decent chances to score in that first 30 minutes. And yeah, some ways we were probably a little bit fortunate or rode our luck to stay within the game at that stage.
Yeah. If this is 3-0 at 30 minutes, the game's essentially done, I think. And it wasn't.
Or even 2-0.
Yeah, so I think it was one of those ones where, based on how the play was going, they probably deserved those goals, and we were a bit lucky they didn't get them. As you say, there was a handball in that, but, I mean, we've seen lesser things not ruled out. Greater things not ruled out. You know, sometimes VAR doesn't get involved in these, and I think, you know, it is the right call end of the day, but I could have seen a different VAR saying, it's a bit hard to tell, we'll just let it go, because it's very close. There's not a lot of time to react, all that kind of stuff. That, yeah, I think when it leads to a goal like this, you should be ruling it out. But, yeah, different day, different ref, different decision.
Dave, I want to talk to you about this and the corner. And there was another corner as well, basically heading towards that back post in around the 6-yard box. Paulson doesn't look, it seems to be in his corridor of uncertainty. He doesn't look to get out to that back post around that 6-yard box. It seems like someone, you know, people have figured out that's a bit of an exploit. Is this just him, or is this a way they set that defense up?
I mean, you've got a couple of factors there, because at this point you've also lost Tim Payne, who's reasonably important to how I imagine your set plays are intended to go defensively. But I think Paulson as well is aware that he's not the biggest guy in the world. He can claim well, but he's not big and tall, and he's not going to get over big, tall guys at any sort of range. So I think he knows his kind of claiming distance is a bit shorter than, say, someone like Redmayne would be. And I think that's just going to be a limitation of his game until he either grows another foot or, you know, just works out some different ways to deal with it. Because I think he knows he's a good shot stopper, and he backs himself. And he does claim well when he comes for it, but he doesn't come at much range. He prefers to kind of back himself to save the shot if there's a header at the back post.
Yeah, I think the Serda one, who volleyed the back post, it was actually a well-worked move by Sydney, because they had, I think, maybe Robert Mack standing at that back post shielding the ball that was going over. So it looked like quite a deliberate play, because I think it was Rufa and, I don't know, maybe might have been Hughes or someone. Well, both got sort of blocked by Mac, and that gave Lacerda the time to take a touch and smash the volley. So, yeah, I don't know whether that's, I don't think that's a Pulisic thing. It's just, I think they've just found a, you know, a set play that sometimes works and sometimes wouldn't.
Yeah, I found that defending by Sermon and Roofs a bit naive, both trying to push straight rather than one of them just going around and getting to the marker. But hopefully they learn from that one for next time. After that 30-minute mark, we looked like we started getting into it a little more. I'm guessing the press from Sydney was starting to tire those legs out. We saw a set piece that Sermon got on the end of, and yeah, not the best header by the young man, but Redmayne managed to palm it over. He made a save from Pennington, and Old had a shot as well. Did you guys feel like this was us climbing back into it, or just the tired legs at the end of the half and then it would reset at the beginning of the next?
Yeah, well, I think about 30 minutes, it didn't look good for us, did it at all? I think, I don't know if I said to you, Dave, or someone else, like, this does not look like we're getting anything out of it. And yeah, I don't know. I think maybe we just settled in. I don't know what it was, but maybe we worked out how to play around them a bit better. But yeah, that last 15 minutes of that second half, we looked significantly better. As you say, I think we probably had the better chances in that towards the end of that half. And then thought the second half we were a lot better than them. It was almost chalk and cheese. We were just lucky that we weren't trying to claw back too much from that game up until that point.
I wonder if a little complacency set in for Sydney as well, because they were all over us. You know, if you're playing on that side, obviously you don't have the goals on the board, but you were all over us. I can see why, as you say, maybe the press is getting a little tired, but also you're thinking, we've got this in the bag. Just keep playing like this and game's ours comfortably, right? So I do wonder if there was maybe a little bit of us kind of getting a foot back in the game, but also them really settling into thinking, we've got this pretty comfortably under control. We don't need to do anything much here. We'll just keep doing what we're doing. And then as they start to tire, we, you know, got 15 minutes of decent football under our belts.
Well, surely that'd be a bit of a naive move. I mean, you don't get to top of the table just by getting a bit lucky. You've obviously got to score goals, and we've managed to do it against the odds again. Let's get right to it. I mean, that first goal, I think 54 minutes after Old managed to try and smash a volley that didn't quite come off, just a pass through to Costa, and just beautiful wee run, and then just slides the ball precision. Like, unfortunately for the Sydney defender, he tried to cut it out, but all he could do, it was, yeah, I mean, this is a beautifully weighted cross, wasn't it? There wasn't much he could do once it got past Redmayne.
No. These are the kind of goals that I know they're not offside, but I feel like it should be offside. Because if Crave is in an offside position when Costa plays the ball through to him, and of course the defender doesn't know that, because how can you be looking in two places at the same time, slides in to try stop it from getting to Crave and turns it into his own net. Now if Crave, you know, what's he meant to do? Like, let it run to him and assume that it's off, like hope that it's offside? I feel like if there's a ball, you know, being delivered to a player who's in offside position and it causes a defender to do something, then that, I think that should be offside. I know it's not by the rules.
Agreed.
But I feel like this is benefiting bad attacking play rather than punishing poor defending play.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, you're never going to get a defender like me arguing with that, Dale. It was,
and you do have weird exceptions to this where you do call it offside. You know, if he's standing in front of the guy and it's the goalkeeper and it's obstructing his view, suddenly it does matter. But if it's a guy running behind a defender, which is as a defender in that position equally problematic for you, it doesn't count. I'm like, it just seems like a weird, yeah, a weird situation where I agree. It feels on the face of it like these should be treated the same, that it should be offside. You shouldn't gain an advantage in that way by being in an offside position.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that that's the rule, but that's the rule. We got a bit, shall we say, a bit lucky, but I don't want to say we're due some luck, but if you're playing this well throughout the season, maybe you kind of earn a bit of luck sometimes.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the offside lines were for the Costa, because I think he was flashy flagging for the first ball to Costa, I think, but the replay didn't show any, you know, VAR lines. I don't know how close it was, but it looked pretty tight.
It was close, possibly. Yeah. I think Bratton played him on. But it was inches, not feet.
Yeah.
You've kind of also got to put on the other side of the coin. It's like, how much pressure is there on players knowing that someone like Costa is streaking up that side, and that, you know, a bit of that nerves that gives everyone a bit of a 2%, you know, bit more pressure on them. I wonder how much that kind of affects them. You know, it's not something that we play with, right? We don't know about someone's reputation or whether they're in red hot form. But I do wonder if kind of that does get into the scenario when you know that Costa's playing like that and everyone's busting a gut and just gets their angles a little bit wrong.
Yeah, because I was thinking about this the other day, actually. We've had quite a few very close offsides go for us. I know, you know, there was old a couple of weeks ago. I had one earlier in the season about Western United. There was this one. Was there one last week or 2 weeks ago? I feel like there was another one that I can't remember. But I can't recall many the other way of us, you know, losing out by a fraction of an inch because of VAR. So I don't know whether that's just a, you know, we're a bit better at timing our runs or whatever. They're just like, you know, it's just some of those, you know, even a couple of those went the other way because of a fraction of a, you know, second difference, how, you know, different the season, you know, could be.
Well, I wonder if that's also partly confidence, right? If someone's feeling confident in their ability to pick it and they're a talented player, more often than not, they're going to get it right. But when they're not confident, maybe they're thinking, oh, I need to go early. They're a little bit twitchy. It'd be curious if someone could ever quantify that. But, you know, it does seem to go that way. When a team's playing well, they seem to get those calls go for them. It's nice to be able to play Sydney and see those calls go for us, because it doesn't happen very often. There was a nice bit of Paulson magic that kind of kept us in this game. Triple save at that back post. It was a bit of a melee in there. It just dropped on that 6-yard line again. He's got down for once, made one save, got down for another, was a bit lucky that he was already lying where the guy was about to kick it. Then he's got up and got another hand to it. The first save was a good one too, turning it onto the post. Dave, this is a bit of magic. He's pulled this out a dozen times this season. I mean, is that a dozen goals he's saved?
I mean, potentially. I mean, he's a great shot stopper, and he's clearly high on confidence at the moment too. And when you're a keeper, that absolutely helps, right? You sometimes do exactly the same things and everything seems to go through your hands. And other days you throw yourself at them and they all just seem to hit you. And, you know, he's put himself in the right spots and they've all gone into him, and he's made, you know, a great triple save. But equally, another day that goes all wrong for him. So I think, he's clearly in good form. He's clearly got the confidence, and we know he is a good shot stopper. So I think you're going to keep seeing him play like that. And that's probably why he's going to, you know, go on to some bigger and better stuff. But, yeah, we've got to make the most of him while we've got him, because, yeah, good young keeper.
He's also pretty much the only even something resembling a half chance in that last 60 minutes or so. Yep. Like, that was their only... After the goal, after our second goal, I think they had two shots, and they're both, like, looping headers from, you know, 18 yards out or 16 yards out. They just did not have anything after about 30 minutes except for that one, you know, triple save. But, yeah, that's one big exception. But I think that just highlights how much better we controlled the game in that last hour or so.
Mm. It was really just that not controlling our six-yard box that seemed to be the problem. We were controlling, you know, the 20 metres in front of it rather tidily. Even if we didn't get the ball further out than that, we seemed to, as you would say, Dale, we were comfortable. Let's talk about that second goal, because this was a Costa classic. Well, certainly Costa this season classic, because it was all left foot. Nice pass. I think you said it was Salas up there. Costa's had that centre-back, their left centre-back, on toast for most of the game. Just cuts inside him, leaves him behind, and just drills it far post. This is what we expect from Form Costa, right? This is a guy that just, he knows how to run this. He's not guessing. He just has it all under control. Did you genuinely think that this wasn't going to be a goal by the time he cut in?
No, well, hard to say. I think it would be very easy for him to have had a shot before he cut in. Seeing two players, you know, coming, trying to cover and go, I'll just pull the trigger here. Maybe Redmayne parries it and someone taps it home, you know.
But does Form Costa do that? Nervous Costa does.
Yeah.
I feel like Form Costa trusts himself to just do that little bouncy chop inside that he does.
Yeah, I think perhaps the defending of the two centre-backs helped made him that decision, because yeah, I think he had Lacerda close-ish to him, but then Matthews tried to come across and give cover to Lacerda, but was like really, really close to him, and they both ended up defending the same kind of channel. I think maybe the same, you know, shot-to-goal kind of line. And I think if Matthews had held off slightly and not kind of gone blazing in to try block whatever shot there was, yeah, if Costa tried to chop back in, he probably would have had an easy tackle to make. But they both kind of went charging in, and I think maybe, you know, Costa, for his, you know, to his credit, realised that, chopped back in, and yeah, scored a pretty decent goal.
I mean, but Dave, is this the effect of Form Costa, that everyone, the defenders, basically panic and don't make the rational decision?
Perhaps, but also, as a defender, I think you've already seen him stuff up that chip, right? So you're not thinking today's his day necessarily, right? That the only goal he scored past you at this point was one you guys put into your own net. The other one, he should have had a goal and he muffed it. So I think you're not looking at Costa on this particular day thinking he's in red hot form, everything's gold that he touches. So I don't know that that's playing on your mind here, but I also agree with Dale. I think the shot earlier could easily have been a goal, because you did have guys running in. It probably would have been a parried save. So I don't think it would have been the worst option. I'm glad he has the confidence at the moment to see it open up and find the better option. Because I think if your striker had taken the first pop, you wouldn't have been upset with him.
There was that other miscontrol that Costa did, actually, when the ball was put through from the left and he just got it off the shin and knocked it straight to Redmayne. That was the one that I thought that was going to be the end of our day. After this, it wasn't, I think, yeah, well, let's use the word again, it was comfortable. There was another sub, we saw Pennington go off and Altay come on. Some twit who wasn't involved in the game at all ran on. Hughes managed to pick up, I think it looked like a pinged hamstring maybe. But he certainly looked like he was in a bit of pain. And Ball coming on, of all people. Yeah, that, even though Hughes is like our number three or four choice centre back, surely that's not comfortable for us, because he seems to be that the core part of that back five if we play a five.
Yeah, it's not ideal, because we do play, you know, the more we've got on the season, the more times we've played with a back five, and you know, there's not a lot of depth in that position, you know, beyond, you know, Sermon and and Wootton. Yeah, I think if we were playing back five, you'd probably end up Kelly Heald would probably be the next choice now, I'd say, on the left side.
Mm.
And yeah, he might go right. I don't think he's played there this season, unless it was towards the end of a game, perhaps. I can't recall. But yeah, Hughes has been, you know, very good just about every game he's played. So to see him get a hamstring injury again, you know, that seems like it's going to be a few weeks. So it's got to
plus
hope
Tim Payne.
Plus Tim Payne, yeah. It's not ideal that they're kind of all in around the same kind of spot.
Yeah, I think it probably says something that when this happens, Chiefy does go to a 4-4-2. He brings on Bawley and says we're going 4-4-2. He doesn't try and keep a five out there, because he could have brought on different bodies, but he sends Ball on instead and says, no, we're going 4-4-2 the second Hughes goes down. So I think that probably says something for what they were willing to be prepared for as a five at that moment, whether the training field and a bit of time to prepare sees them come up with a five they're happier with, I don't know. But certainly in that moment, it said something that Chiefy was like,
no. It's interesting, though, because Kelly Heald was stripped and ready to come on, I think, and then they changed their minds, I think. Was that the time when...
Indeed.
I can't remember. Was that the one where Wootton got booked, maybe, I think?
Carded, absolutely, yep.
So obviously they were going to go one for... Well, yeah, swap one for one or like for like, but bailed out of that quite, you know, after a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, the international window is coming up, so that does buy us an extra week. But hamstrings, as Spoons was pointing out, they are niggly and really tweaky to get right.
Well, and knowing our luck, the international window might buy us another injury or two as well. So it could go either way.
That said, Darren Baisley doesn't seem to like playing a lot of our guys. So, you know, Tommy Smith will get some minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the international window also gives Zawada another week or two. I think TV said before that he was kind of, he could have played today, but they decided to give him another 2 weeks to try to get him fit for once.
Yeah.
Big tall lad. Do you reckon he can play centre-back?
He certainly doesn't mind bumping bodies and using his head, so I don't think there's much difference to what he does already. Just got to make sure he turns and faces the other net before he tries shooting. Should we crack straight onto the women's game now? Also against Sydney, no Annalie Longo or Rebecca Lake, Kate Taylor on the bench. So it was Foster, Barry, Jaber. I haven't had a definitive answer on that. Jaber.
I think it's Jaber. I think we decided it was Jaber.
She's Australian. It's probably Jaber. Robertson, Brazendale, Breslin, Elliott, Wynnum, Fraser, and Speckmire. Good to see Speckmire getting another start. Obviously over her injuries now. But against Sydney, this was a tough watch, gents. Certainly the first half was a very tough watch.
Some teams you don't want to come up with when you're playing your fourth choice centre back and you're probably seventh or eighth defensive centre midfielder, and it's probably, you know, Sydney's one of them. Like, you know, the, you know, former side, I think, you know, probably going to go close to winning the premiership. But when you've got, you know, you're picking the bones of your, you know, your spine at centre back and holding midfielder, it's always going to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, certainly Courtney Vine didn't seem to mind who we were putting up against her. She looks better and better since that World Cup. That first goal, let's go straight to that, because holy shit, yeah. What a hit. I mean...
Yeah, it's going to be a tough day anyway, as you say, with your spine under pressure, but when you're also scoring goals like this, I mean, what are you meant to do?
I mean, honestly, they could have scored a couple of times before that, and we looked a bit rough. It was really only Robertson kind of making breaks that kind of gave you any hope. But Jesus, a flat corner out to the top of the box, and Vines just hit a half volley inside out and just cracked it right into the side netting. That sucks the wind out of you. I thought this was, at that stage, I was sure this was going to be an absolute bloodbath.
I think the most shocking thing about this is, to be honest, it looks like a set move.
Oh, it
looks
was.
Like one they've planned. So she can hit that with reasonable consistency. that's a worry. Like, what are you meant to do about that?
What I found really a bit saddening, this was how much space they were affording Vine in and around the box. I found this, it was a little naive. I mean, I think you're right, Dale. Probably I'm being a bit hard on them, being as it's, you know, your fourth and fifth choice centre backs at times, and it's, you know, we don't have that defensive cover. But in my mind, when you know that Courtney Vine's on the other side, I mean, I think even her goal later on, she was unmarked for a header. She was dangerous all day, and just a number of times she just appeared in space with no one trying to shut her down. It was a bit, yeah, how would you describe it, Dale? It wasn't comfortable, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of commentary about, oh, yeah, why don't we have someone on her at the edge of the 18-yard box? But it's quite a luxury to have at a corner, have someone spare to mark someone at the edge of the box. You know, no one's we've seen this in the men's game, exactly the same thing, where some of it's like, you know, 20 yards out, and they try ping it and they side volley it. And sometimes, you know, it goes top pins. But it's a luxury to have, I think, to take someone out of the middle on the, you know, 1% chance that first they can ping a ball flat enough that you don't get out to it, and then, you know, connect with such quality through, you know, a mass of people to go in. And so I kind of feel that's a little, you know, a little bit harsh. If she'd done, you know, three or four of these in the season, then maybe you pick that up. But as far as I'm aware, this is the first time.
I was more meaning just generally speaking. She did get a lot of time and space in box.
Yeah, the headed one from the free kick was particularly bad, because you have time to set it up. And as soon as that cuts the wide angle, you see she's just drifted off. I'm not sure who exactly. It's a bit hard to tell from the quality of the footage, but someone's drifted off. And I think Barry's missed the header, and she's just had a free reign. I think that's one that's more frustrating, because there is time to, you know, set it up, and she's in, you know, a prime position where there should be a big, you know, big light above her going, mark me. And for some reason, we didn't.
There were a couple of other warning shots going on. I think Foster made a decent save from a header as well. It might have even been Vine. But the second goal, I mean, if the first one hurts because it's a absolute rip snorter, this one kills you when your centre back gets it caught under her feet with no one around and just accidentally wobbles it into her own net. This is a heartbreaker, right? If she had just been half a step faster or slower or slightly more side on, she would have been able to deal with it. Is there anything to say apart from it's just bloody bad luck?
I don't know. This one, like the men's game one, right, I don't feel like the defender could have done much differently. This one I look at and think, oh, you should have done better, right? It's a really tough spot you're in. You've got to make a play at it, and there's probably an element of bad luck. But I just see this one, I think, oh, you should have cleared that, you know? Whereas it's stark contrast to the one in the other game where you think, nothing you can do there. That's just how it goes. So, yeah. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh.
I felt like she was hoping that it was going to drift a little bit more in front of her and she could just swivel and whack it with her left foot, but it was just basically coming right at her planted foot. Yeah, I mean, you hope that you deal with that, but, oh, it hurt. It really hurt. It must be gratifying, Dave, though, to see Mickey Robertson actually getting enough game time now to pin her ears back and use a bit of that speed and make those runs into that final third.
I mean, yeah, she's a great player and she can do that. It's a matter of finding the right ways to get her on the field and the right positions to be in, because, yeah, she can do that all day. So it's good to see. It would have been nice to have seen her finding the kind of confidence and I guess the players around her to open that up for her earlier in the season, because it could have led to a hatful of goals. But we have been scoring goals other ways. So, yeah, it's maybe a bit of horses for courses.
Do you think that this is maybe a byproduct of having two ball playing tens now in there with Macy Fraser and Alyssa Winham, being able to distribute that ball and draw the defence in as well?
Yeah, I think it's certainly having two tens does, I guess, make the defence navigate more centrally as opposed to one. So it probably does give a little bit more sort of width and space to wide players. But yeah, I think for Robinson, I guess perhaps we haven't quite seen this season as maybe a progression from last season. Like, I thought she was quite good last season, but I think this season, and maybe it's a little bit for being kind of in and out or out for a long period of time, but just feels like just not quite as clinical as you'd hope. And maybe I'm just expecting a bit too much, but she's had a couple of good, very good chances the last month or so that she hasn't even looked close like scoring. So
100%.
But I think that's a little bit of same for a few players. So I don't want to, you know, pick on her too much.
And I think that's been her story in a Phoenix jersey to some extent as well, right? There's some pretty key moments in previous seasons where she's been able to get in behind and score a goal, and it's ruled out for millimeter perfect offsides, you know, in the 92nd minute. That kind of stuff has been, you know, just the luck not quite rolling her way when the chances have come for a lot of her games. So I think, you know, as you say, it might seem a bit harsh, but it also is a bit of a theme to, you know, the situation she's in, that she probably should have scored more than she has.
I wonder if this is just, I mean, she's a little bit older than a lot of the other players, and that learning curve is probably going to be a little bit shallower than some of the younger players. I hope, for me, she's kind of shown enough that she's got the raw attributes. So I kind of hope that she does get more opportunities and can kind of get a bit to show for it. Because I think that, I think we saw the sub not long after the second Vine goal where Kate Taylor came on in that midfield, but Cox came on later. She's a marked difference to a player like Cox, who is big and strong and has a lot of foot skills, doesn't have the pace that Robertson does. And I like seeing that variety in players in your team. I thought that bringing Cox on after they'd been have Robertson running at them so much really gave Cox an advantage to run against tired legs. She made the most of it too. She looked really good.
Yeah, I think for her, she has just a bit more in her locker about how to beat players. Like, she can quite easily, like in a tight space, chop or turn them and get past and use a bit more, you know, of her muscle to, for want of a better word, barge people out the way. So I think she does certainly offer something a bit different. Yeah, it's a shame when she came on we were, you know, out of sight already. So despite her, you know, contribution.
I kind of thought we should have been out of sight at that stage, but when she came on and Taylor came on, I felt that there was a bit of a lift, and especially once we got that first goal. It was actually Cox that headed home over the top of the goalkeeper, which is, I love to see that. She's just getting in there and using her height and strength. In the end, I don't think the keeper barely touched it. That was brilliant. Not long after that, she had the fullback absolutely stitched up, just doing step overs, not kind of leaving her anything to work with. I felt like we started getting a bit more of a sniff into it. Yeah, I know that it was kind of three down, but 3-1 back, it starts looking a bit better. And then once the miscontrol by the Sydney defence and Speckmeyer just smashes it in from close range. I know it didn't feel like we deserved to be 3-2 down, but it was, you know, I just got a sniff that they were on the up.
Well, maybe there's a little bit of, you know, 3-0 up and Sydney kind of take their foot off a little bit and we, you know, seize the opportunity, and then, you know, they get back to 3-2 and they just kick up another gear again to extend the lead soon, you know, not long after that.
Yeah, it was only a couple of minutes. And I think as well, this was the one that we just, no one put their boot through it. No one cleared. So, you know, any window we did have in our sails, we kind of took out ourselves by some pretty lackluster defending at the other end. You know, our ball was there to clear, and instead we just had our pocket picked and an easy tap in, you know. So any kind of optimism that was building, I think they kind of crushed themselves out of to some extent.
Yeah, that goal was, it was a bit of a backbreaker for me. Like, we had two players there to get rid of it, and there was no Sydney player in Kui. I think it was Robertson and Mackenzie Barry. And I mean, I expect Mackenzie Barry to basically take control of that box. Mickey Robertson, she's back. She's doing, she's helping out. But I hope that defenders have it in there, just in the back of their lizard brain that goes, no, this is mine to deal with. I need to get rid of it. Even if it's just whack it upfield or whack it out or whatever, but just, I wonder if this is just a little bit of the confidence sap from Mackenzie. She's, I mean, how many centre back partners has she had this year? Have we done a count?
She had a few. I think she's
been the only regular in that back line, I think.
Oh yeah, it's one of those. It's frustrating because they haven't had to work for it. I think in some ways, even a draw probably wouldn't have mattered that much, I think, in the grand schemes of things, just of how the other results have gone. So there's kind of an element of, I guess, somewhat saving some of your players for the later games this week. So it's not like, I mean, we kind of had to win it, really. Like, I don't think a draw would have mattered too much. But yeah, I think just some of the goals that just conceded were just a bit, just pretty loose. And we, you know, in previous, maybe in the first two-thirds of the season, yeah, we didn't really give too many goals like that. We were pretty solid defensively. And I think, yeah, just the fact that we're starting to get, as I said, you know, down to some of our, you know, non-preferred players in the heart of there is I think probably gone to, you know, points to some of the looseness of the goals that we've conceded.
Yeah, I totally agree. Obviously, having someone who was the nailed-on centre-back basically becoming a nailed-on defensive mid and Kate Taylor, it's kind of probably even made it slightly more difficult in that formational shift as well. We are seeing a lot of minutes for some of the academy players. I guess they are they on academy contracts or what? How? Like Errington and Brazendale, or are they on temporaries?
I have a feeling a couple of them may have been upgraded. I think they get automatically upgraded after a certain number of games or minutes or something like that. I think there's some A-League contractual thing about that.
At least they're getting valuable minutes out of it, even if it's a loss. I thought that if we'd managed to scrape a point out of it, it wasn't the point that mattered. It would just kind of be the moral victory. Like, footing it with Sydney, I think, would have done the world for their confidence, ignoring the point. I don't think that... Right now, I don't think points even matters anymore. I don't think getting the six is kind of the aim. It should be to foot it with everyone you're against. Just play it game by game. Speaking of, this is a bit of a bumper for the Knicks women's team. They have two games in the next week versus Adelaide on Wednesday and versus Canberra on Sunday. This is a tough week when you've got back-to-back games, but when you're kind of missing players and you're missing a lot of your leadership and missing Annalie Longo, that's kind of extra tough, is it? What do you want to see out of these games, guys?
I mean, it's a really tough one because I think you look at where we were earlier in the season and you know, we did discuss at various points on the pod about maybe a little bit of overperformance. But I think as well, you would have had some real belief and some real ambition of making the six. And now that's kind of almost out of touching distance. It's really tough from here. And it's at a tough time, scheduling-wise, missing players-wise. So I think it's going to be a tough kind of finish off to their season. I really think they will still be trying to keep that belief alive and looking for 3 points out of each of these games. But I do think given where they were and given what their ambitions for the season were, this is maybe going to be a tough week where it does kind of break the back of it and where we lose that touching distance.
Dale?
Is two wins too much to ask for? I think they're both very winnable games. You know, Adelaide away for them, you know, lots of travel. They're not their best side. We should have, you know, cleaned them up first time round. And Canberra away is a bit of a trickier one. But yeah, we basically need to win the last three games and hope a couple of results go our way to stick in the six. I think it'd be, trying to think, like, it'd be a little bit unfortunate if we just miss out. Because I feel like, you know, if we hadn't had a bunch of injuries to some key, like a bunch of long-term injuries to a couple of key players, I think this season could have played out quite a bit different.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But in saying that, I kind of look at it and go, if you'd said that the Wahenuks were going to turn around and, albeit be 10th, but show that they can, you know, when they've got the majority of their players there, they can foot it against anyone, I would have bitten your hand off. As you say, Adelaide sitting 11th, one place, but 7 points behind us, and same with Canberra, six points from that isn't unrealistic. Both Adelaide and Canberra are not great at drawing, and we are probably even worse at drawing, to be quite frank. So I suspect this is kind of either going to be 3 points or six. I can't see how we don't turn over Adelaide. They've got a goal difference of negative 20.
Yeah, it sounds like Taylor's is probably going to start tomorrow against Adelaide, which hopefully will give us a bit more solidity in that middle. But Longo's still nowhere to be seen, unfortunately. And yeah, if we can't beat Adelaide at home, yeah, we don't deserve to be anywhere near the six, I don't think.
Ooh, that's harsh, Dale. Dave, you got any chipper words? Any?
After you two both just said it should be a guaranteed 3 points, I think you've already jinxed it enough. I'll stay out of it.
Yeah. Okay, that's probably about right. That game, just for those that aren't aware, will be at Porora Park, Jerry Collins, at 5 p.m. on Wednesday. Hopefully we get the pot out before then. No pressure, Dale. And as Dale says, and according to Dale's maths, because his maths is far greater than mine, we would need to win the last three games and hope that Western Sydney don't win their other game and Newcastle don't win their last two to qualify for the six. This feels very much of the Knicks men's usual thing where we finish seventh by a point. But I'll be quite honest, a good showing by the team here. I mean, that would satisfy me, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of difference between finishing, say, 10th and finishing 7th or 8th, I think, just from a sort of psychological, you know, that shows just a bit more progression, even if it's not that many more points up the table. Yeah, it'd be nice just to gain a couple more places at least in this last week or so.
And obviously the men's team have a break, still top of the table by 3 points. However, Central Coast have a game in hand. Obviously, the break is due to the international window where the All Whites will be off to Egypt. It was going to be, is it Saudi? It was somewhere in the Middle East, but whoever organised the tournament.
UAE, I think.
Let's say somewhere in the Middle East and whoever was organising it didn't come through with some payments, so it's now going to be played in Egypt. As mentioned before, Alex Rufer has been pulled back into the squad in place of the injured Tim Payne. Any final words, gents, before we come back next week with a bumper doubleheader for the women's? I will take your silence as a full summary has been provided. As we rapidly approach the hour mark, I think I'll say goodnight. Just remember the women's game Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pōuriro Park. And then there is the game that'll be on TV, which is Sunday in Canberra at 4 p.m. New Zealand time. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.